are things going today?
Just Ducky.
Hello. Hi. Welcome, everybody. You are listening to The Klatch on Voice of Vashon, 101.9 on your radio dial. I have wanted to say that for so long, and I know, so forgive me if I just had to say that in lovely downtown Vashon, Washington.
Also at voiceofvashon.org, and your host is Linda Nygaard.
Hi, I'm Linda Nygaard. I'll be your host today, and with me in the station is Susan McCabe.
Hello,
my co-host and stealth engineer for the program. She does everything here. And today we have a special guest in our studio. The Vashon Mori Fire Chief, Matt Vinci, is here. Hi, Matt.
Good afternoon.
Welcome. We're really glad to hear you. This is a first time for Matt to be in the studio. And we want to talk with Matt about what's going on at the fire department. And we also want to get to know Matt, the person. So we will visit with Matt in a little while. Matt, I wanted to tell you, we're going to talk about a couple other things for a minute. And you're welcome to jump in with ideas or comments or anything. So we're
jibes,
just
jokes,
jibes, whatever. Yeah. We're here around the table having a cup of coffee and a little bit of a chat. In the meantime, it's time for a COVID checkup. Check in.
Yeah, I'm not doing a check up.
No, don't do a check up. I'm sorry. We're going to do a check in. And what I read is that the rate of new infections and deaths over the last 15 days is decreasing globally, which is great to know. However, here's a number. In the United States, 56,000 cases are reported new every day. And in Washington, there are approximately 3,500 every day.
New COVID cases per day.
Per day.
But what about hospitalizations?
They're down. I don't have those numbers, but they're down, and deaths are way down,
Of
course.
Matt, you probably have some information about that.
Yeah, we definitely continue to see patients that are affected by COVID on the island, and we've transported a few and treated a few. So, you know, it's there. It's real. It exists. You know, our staff continue to take precautions to make sure that they're protected, the public's protected, and we monitor those hospitalization rates. A plug to the MRC and Dr. Bristow and folks who have been really helpful to, you know, guide us.
The World Health Organization came out with a statement saying that they're very concerned about what's going on in China, and they feel like China's not being honest about the numbers. Mm-hmm. And that the numbers are much, much higher. If you want to read it, it's long and involved. It's on the World Health Organization website.
So clearly the numbers are rising because they have stopped all their no COVID restrictions.
Right.
The question in my mind is, are the Chinese folks now who have been so protected for so long getting hospital-style sick are there fatalities because they might be getting earlier, more severe cases of COVID, and or I believe their vaccines are not as effective as the ones that have been used here and in
really?
European countries.
Really? I hadn't heard that.
The Chinese
COVID
vaccine is apparently less effective
than
the ones that we've used here. So interesting questions. And when those people then come to the United States, what are they bringing?
Right. I did read somewhere that we are requiring a negative COVID test from Chinese people who are coming to the United States.
That would make sense.
And
yeah.
I think they're doing that, but I don't know that 100%. Anyway, Europe's doing okay. They're kind of leveled out. But they're doing okay, and the reduced infections, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we're seeing the same in Vashon.
Yeah, and the thing now is there's still flu. There's
still a cold.
Yeah, there's still strep throat running around. There's pneumonia. So,
you know this is interesting. Three different people that I've talked to in the last month or so, including myself, because I do talk to myself sometimes, is had a three-day thing. It was like sneezing like a wild person, sneezing. And really nothing else. And it was 3 days of watery eyes, runny nose, sneezing, and nothing else.
Well, Dr. McCabe says that sounds like an allergy.
Well, that's what I thought. But when three other people have it for 3 days,
yeah,
that's identical allergies.
Of course, I'm ready to go into a diagnostic exploration here, but it would probably take too long.
It probably would.
Like, were they all in the same place?
Right. Well, they all lived on Bashan. So, you know, it's possible.
Yeah, interesting.
It's possible. But it did perk my ears up a little bit, and I did think, but I took COVID tests, and they were negative. So that's it. Anything else on COVID?
No, I'm tired of it.
I am too. Really tired of it. So let's talk about something really different.
Okay.
Today is January. I'm a month ahead of my time. Today is January 24th. Uh-huh. Tomorrow's January 25th. Do you know what day that is?
Uh-uh.
It's Robert Burns' birthday. Robert Burns, the poet from the 1700s.
Yes.
And he, you know, there are Burns celebrations. Robert Burns was a prolific poet, and most people really love his work. I've read a little of it, and yeah, some of it. I mean, he wrote Auld Lang Syne.
There's a whole group of Burns devotees who have been here on this island and who celebrate.
And I'm sure they're having a big celebration tomorrow night. And I've heard about this celebration on Vashon. I've been to a couple celebrations elsewhere, but not on Vashon. And I know that they have haggis. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I would refresh your memory about what is actually in haggis.
Do I really want to know?
Yeah, you do, because it's awful. So here's a recipe. 1 sheep liver, 1 sheep heart, 1 sheep tongue, 1/2 pound of suet, 3 medium onions, 1/2 pound of dry oats, 1 teaspoon of kosher salt, and 1/2 teaspoon of black pepper, and 1 teaspoon dried ground herbs. Hmm. Now, what is 1 teaspoon of herbs going to do in a mess
like
that?
Not enough.
And then they wrap it all up in a stomach. I think it's a sheep stomach.
There's one whole sheep has had it here.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and they love it. But an interesting thing that I found out about haggis is that in the 1700s, they've been having haggis forever, you know. 1800s, they had a haggis throwing contest.
And sure, they didn't want to eat it.
And the women would throw it at their husbands who caught them in their kilt. And then they would go eat the haggis.
In their...
Like, you know, if you've been like some kilted... Oh, no, not like...
Yeah, what's under that kilt? Haggis. Yeah.
Well, we don't just haggis. Yeah. And so, and there's also, this is really tidbitty, but there's also a faction of people in the United States and around the world who think Robert Burns was nothing but a sex addict. And, you know, there are several things written about him that he, in like 1784, he had an affair with somebody named Jean Armour, and she went to bear him 2 sets of twins. And they think then eventually they got married, but he did get married again, and nobody knows if they were separated or not. He met Mary Campbell the same year. They became lovers, and they believe he may have married her too. And then in 1788, he married another woman. So in the end, I guess his reputation as a bard is well deserved. His reputation as a person is questionable, I guess. And then you think about, okay, so how do I separate that person who did those dastardly things? And believe me, I found out some dastardly things he did that we won't talk about on the radio.
That bad.
But how do you separate the poet from the poetry?
And that's a question for a lot of folks.
It is.
We discussed earlier, Woody Allen is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
How do you separate the artist from their art?
Right, because you love the movie.
Yeah.
You know, there's, yeah, yeah. Well, in his own defense.
Burns,
I'm sorry. Okay. Burns wrote this. It is natural for a young fellow to like the acquaintance of females, and it's customary for him to keep them company when occasion serves. Some one of them is more agreeable to him than the rest. There is something, he knows not what, pleases him, he knows not how, in her company. This I take to be what is called love with the greatest part of us. So he fell in love a lot.
But he was only 37 when he died.
When he died.
He covered a lot of ground.
I know.
Hmm. And I don't think they kept very good records in Scotland of who's married to whom, when, and how
well,
often.
Well, no, this is all hearsay. And apparently there's some things written down somewhere that indicate the timeline is pretty correct. But yeah, there's always gossip. And, you know, he's in the 1780s onward, there's a list of, I don't know, 15 or 20 women that he had affairs with. And one of them died bearing his child. So,
Ouch. Yeah,
there's just a lot of interesting things about him. But anyway, if you're out there going to celebrate Burns, have a great time. And I know...
Have an affair.
No, don't. We didn't say that. They smoke cigars. They drink whiskey. They eat haggis. They have bagpipes. Somebody reads poetry. It's quite a...
They cry.
They carry
laugh.
On.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big deal. And I hope y'all have a really good time.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, a 37-year-old who's had 15 or 20 affairs, frankly, isn't that uncommon in this country. Man or woman.
Well, that's true.
Some of our celebrities could probably top that.
Maybe somebody on Bashan can top that.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
This is how rumors get started. Right?
I know. We'll start one pretty soon.
Okay.
So, Matt... First of all, Matt.
Yes.
How do you prefer to be addressed?
Matt.
That's what I thought.
Works for me.
Yeah.
And how do we pronounce your last name?
Vinci.
I asked him that too, and because I was saying Vinci.
Well, yeah. Vinci.
Yeah. Yeah.
They came, they saw, they conquered?
They came in 1915, 1918, something like that, over to Ellis Island.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, my great-grandparents, yep.
So did you go to Ellis Island and see where they were?
I did.
Isn't that something?
I have documents too, all the documentation of my great grandparents coming into the country. And
wow,
my great grandmother was a nurse. My great grandfather was a mason. And they lived in they went to from.
Do
New
you mean
York
a
City,
brick mason or a mason
a
mason?
Brick mason.
Okay.
Yep. And went from New York to up to Connecticut. And settled in Connecticut, in Middletown area of Connecticut. And that's where my dad's side. That's on my dad's side, yeah.
Did they come from Italy, both of them?
They did. Sicily, yep.
Sicily. Yeah.
Syracusa, if I had it right. Syracusa or Syracusa.
Yep. Oh, wow. Well, there are a lot of stories there, huh?
A lot of stories, yeah.
Yeah, I bet really, there are. Did you get to? Did you ever meet your great-grandparents?
Oh, yeah. Yep, spent quite a bit of time with my great-grandparents, yep.
That's fabulous.
Yep, they had a house down on the beach that we went to every
summer. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was a wonderful experience, growing up. And a lot of great Italian food.
I was going to just say, did Grandma cook?
Yeah, Grandma cooked. Great-great-grandma cooked. She cooked Sicilian pizza. No cheese, just sauce and spices and stuff. We were just talking about this the other night. Yeah, and
we should ask you to do a review of our pizzerias.
Oh, I will, yeah.
We've got... I think you're right. Yeah. And a new one down across the street from Vashon Center for the Arts.
I saw that. I want to try it out.
We tried it last night.
Was it good?
It was really good.
I've heard it's really good. Their menu looks great.
Wood fired, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I went to some friend's house the other night for dinner, speaking of pizza, and they had pizza that they made at home, and he had been perfecting his pizza dough recipe. He ferments it for 3 days, and they just do all these things with it. And they got a new little pizza oven that's about the size of a toaster oven on legs with a big, maybe it's like granite or marble slab in it. And you set it on the porch. It has to be on the porch on a fireproof surface.
Otherwise, you'll burn your house down.
It reaches 1,000 degrees.
Oh, no wonder.
Yeah, and so I watched them do all this, and the pizza goes in with a shovel, like they do, with a pizza paddle, and it takes 3 minutes.
Wow.
And you have to stand there and kind of turn it, or it'll burn, you know, but man, it was good. So
a thousand degrees? What kind of, they have asbestos gloves, I take it?
No, because you're far away from it, and the pizza thing has a long handle on it, you know. So anyway, we weren't going to talk about pizza today, but now I'm hungry.
Me too.
For a really good pizza.
I just want to point out to the audience and to Matt that one of Linda's other shows is a cooking show. She's a definite foodie. Yeah. That show is stirring the pot. So the joke is that she always manages to bring food into the clatch.
Well, stirring the pot is on vacation right now. So, yes. So, you know, I'm going through withdrawal. So thank you for letting me talk about haggis and pizza.
Yeah. Sounds like a firehouse meal.
It does, doesn't it?
And we have some amazing cooks over there.
I bet you do. Yeah, I do want to talk about that. How do they? How do you do that? How do you eat?
Well, they're in for a 48-hour shift, so they kind of, you know, plan their meals. And it's a great you know, conversation about where we're going with nutrition and wellness and fitness. Because even this weekend, we're going to be having our wellness fitness weekend at Camp Burton. And part of it is we're having a nutritionist coming in who's going to teach us about ingredients and, you know, healthy meals. And they paired up with the chefs at Camp Burton to actually cook our meals for the weekend down there at Camp Burton. And they're going to use recipes from our group called O2X Human Performance,
so,
who's coming in.
Tell me about O2X Human Performance and what you're doing at the fire station with regard to that.
Sure. You know, it's been a passion of mine to advocate and take care of firefighters. And, you know, I did it in the legislature in Vermont for close to 15 years and went on to Washington, D.C. and did a lot of advocacy work for the fire service. But, you know, nothing more important than taking care of the people that take care of our community.
Right. Yes.
So when I came to Vashon, I saw a need there. I saw that we needed to, you know, step up our game from a wellness fitness standpoint. And we dug in on the projects and programs that are available, partnered with, actually got a grant from Grannies. So
I know. Thank you, Grannies.
I can't thank them enough. It's just going to go so far. So they paid for half of that, for 50% of that program. And we budgeted for the other half, and we're really excited about being actually the first fire district in the Pacific Northwest to bring O2X program here.
So, so is O2X a is it a mind body spirit integration
it's human performance.
Yeah,
they really kind of bring. They talk about firefighters as tactical athletes. So they really take care of, you know, your mind, your body, your soul, sleep, meditation, mindfulness, yoga, strength training, nutrition. So it's a holistic approach to taking care of firefighters on and off duty. And I will say, too, we're a unique component that we built with O2X is a Saturday evening, our spouses and partners will be coming in. And we'll talk about resiliency and you know, and a strong family unit, and how important that is to our profession. So, you know, our staff go and our volunteers, you know, are away from home quite a bit, and you know, to have a good, solid, strong family unit at home is important. So that's a component of our program this weekend.
That is incredible.
Isn't that fabulous?
How many people are we talking about going to Camp Burton to spend this weekend?
Yeah, we have with our staff and our administrative staff, our commissioners, all of everyone's invited to it. I think we're pushing close to 50. So that's all, most of VIFR. And then we've invited some regional partners to come in. While we're at Camp Burton Saturday and Sunday, Puget Sound Regional Fire Authority and Mountain View Fire Department and also Skyway Fire Department will be on island to cover our calls. So you might see, yeah, you might see a couple of mainland fire apparatus and vehicles here. So they're going to be here, and then I've invited the, or we've invited the leadership of those departments to come and see our program. So maybe hopefully they'll
maybe
see the
they'll want some of it for theirs.
Well, you know, that brings up though a long-standing question that's been a little controversial here on Vashon, and that is. We shifted at one point, and I can't tell you how long ago, from a dispatcher that was here on the island to a dispatcher that is off island, I believe in Burien, but I might be wrong about that. And the big question was, and this was maybe more relative to the sheriff's office, but probably also some of the EMTs, how do the dispatchers get folks where they need to go because they're not aware or familiar with the geography here on the island. So if you've got folks from off island here over the weekend, how are you going to compensate for the fact that they are not familiar with the island and may that could delay their responses?
Yeah, and I definitely, it's a great question. I've heard a little bit about the history behind the dispatch moving from over at Station 55 on Bank Road over to Valley Regional Fire Authority, or excuse me, Valley Comm. You know, I've been over to the Valley Comm facility. It's outstanding. The technology is amazing. You know, it's come a long way. You know, GIS technology, mapping.
Yeah.
Has come a long way. There are definitely things that I'm learning as a new fire chief on the island, landmarks, specific landmarks. We'll have our staff in constant contact with, and this is during the day on Saturday and during the day on Sunday, so our staff will be back in the firehouse Saturday night to cover the island. But they'll be in constant contact with the leadership that's coming over to run calls. You know, GIS mapping, we actually, everything's now done. A lot of it's done on an app. We have an app that dispatches, all the dispatches come up on our phones. So we have, Google mapping technology that brings us right to the incident. And I will say the dispatchers, you talk about the staff, the firefighters, EMTs, our administrative staff, the team that it takes to deliver a service.
Yeah.
Right.
The dispatchers are critical, and they're amazing at what they do. They're highly trained. They know exact questions to ask. They triage every call, so they know what resources to send, and they do an amazing job. So they are a critical component to the full deployment model.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
That
I'm sure the technology
news.
Has improved yeah. since this whole controversy happened. And, you know, things that happen on Vashon are all controversial.
Everything's controversial.
Well, yeah. Well, the old saying is you get three Vashonians in a room and you've got four opinions.
Yeah. So, Matt,
yeah.
what led you to your passion about firefighting and being a firefighter?
Yeah, in high school, you know, a lot of folks in the business, you know, go back to their, you know, their childhood and wanting to be something, you know, in their profession and in their career. In high school, I grew up in southern Vermont. I was born in Boston, and my mom moved to the southern part of the state. And my mom, you know, a lot of firefighters talk about their dads being in the fire service. Well, my mom was an EMT, volunteer EMT.
Wow.
Connected me with the volunteer EMT service that she was involved in and I was in high school. So I went and became what they call an emergency care attendant. And I was pulling shifts, learning the business. And then I got on my local volunteer fire department in high school. And then right after I got out of high school, I went to college and got my associate's degree in fire science so I could have all the credentials needed to test for a job. So you know, kind of early on in my high school life. And I will say my family is, I don't have others that are in the fire service, but a lot of nurses. My grandfather was a doctor, a physician, a lot of service related.
Helpers.
Helpers. That, yeah.
Wow.
Help your neighbor and, you know, a lot of folks that deliver.
That's a proud heritage, isn't it?
It is.
Yes.
Yeah,
you should
is,
be very
yeah.
proud of that.
Yeah.
Jumping around here a little bit, tell us a little bit about where your last office was and what you were doing.
My last office. So, I never thought I'd be in a position where I was actually on a fire truck in where I was working prior in the city of South Burlington, Vermont, where I spent almost 20 years in the business there as a captain. And I got a call from some folks down in Washington, D.C. asking if I was interested in working at the national level, you know, doing advocacy work and education. I thought they might have had the wrong number. we called back and had a couple conversations, and, you know, I got to yes and saw an amazing personal and professional opportunity and went down to Washington, D.C. in 2013 to work for the International Association of Firefighters. It's our labor union that represents 95% of North America's professional firefighters, EMTs, and paramedics. So I was my office was on New York Avenue Northwest. It was a stone's throw from the White House.
Cool.
I took the bus every morning and got dropped off right behind Pennsylvania Avenue and walked over to my office for a little over 8 years, almost 9 years. I was the director of education, training, and human relations. And then I did a short stint at the end to support our transition of our leadership. We had a leadership transition. I was chief of staff, where I made sure all the trains were running on the tracks at the
Boy, that's
right
a big
time.
Job.
That's pretty heady stuff,
yeah,
Matt.
Yeah, that sure is.
Yeah, it was fun.
Would you be called a lobbyist for the union?
Well, I wasn't a lobbyist. I worked on educational programs.
Advocate, maybe.
Yeah, I advocated. I was more of a lobbyist when I was in Montpelier in Vermont at our state capitol, where I advocated for laws, policy, and resources for the fire service in Vermont. When I went to D.C., I traveled both countries working with labor and management to be able to deliver education on everything from what we call kind of the fire business side of our operations to labor and management and union operations.
Mm-hmm. Fire business versus labor and management. Could you explain a little more about the differences?
Yeah, the fire biz, I would say, is more health and safety. So we did health and safety programs. We did a lot on peer support, a lot of work around fire ground survival and firefighter safety programs. So ensuring that firefighters have the right techniques to get out of a building if you're tangled up in a building. We've had a lot of every firefighter injury or fatality. There's a report that's produced by a federal agency that does an investigation, and we read those and learn from those. And
every firefighter in the United States,
every line of duty death or serious injury,
wow.
or what we call a near miss. Yeah, there's It's a dangerous profession.
It is.
It's a very dangerous profession.
Yeah, I can't imagine it. I can't imagine it.
We did a lot of work around, like back when I'm advocating to do here, we're doing here around wellness and fitness, specifically because 60%+ of our line of duty deaths in the nation annually are due to cancer. We have a high incidence of cancer in our profession.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second.
Sure.
And speaking of danger in the job, is that from fighting a fire with contaminant? Why is the cancer rate so high?
It's the byproducts of combustion, and they're everywhere. It's a toxic soup. There are,
You mean just by the fire or everywhere?
It's by the fire. It's the products of combustion that are in the air.
Okay.
It's in the smoke. It's the inhalation, ingestion, absorption. We can encapsulate ourselves as much as possible.
Right.
But like here on Vashon, we're going to be buying two sets of gear so we can go back and clean that gear and our staff can stay in service. So it's another project we're working on now. That is a cancer reduction project.
Because there are so many plastics and different kinds of fabrics and elements in any building that is burning, the off gas from all of that is what the firefighters are breathing. I used to work for Underwriters Laboratories, and they did flashover tests. And the firefighters were pretty well covered, but they had to leave an ear open so they could hear the sound of the fire and where it was going, which I thought was fascinating. But that leaves access somehow
it does.
Their physical being.
Yeah, and we, again, the industry's changing quite a bit. I mean, I can remember going on calls for years and going on, structure fires, coming back to the station, taking your gear off, taking a shower, and you have soot on your skin. And, that's absorbing into your bloodstream. It bioaccumulates. It goes back to advocacy. One of the areas I worked on quite a bit in Vermont and in D.C., was removing flame retardants, carcinogenic flame retardants, from textiles and upholstered furniture.
Right.
So I worked. We passed a major piece of legislation in Vermont, and that's actually my connection back to Washington State.
I was just going to ask you about that.
I had a friend that was doing the same work in Olympia. Really cutting edge, groundbreaking legislation to remove flame retardants. Flame retardants burn. They create furans and dioxins, and those are carcinogenic, and they go into our bloodstream, into our system. So, yeah, it's kind of a holistic approach. It was a policy-driven issue that, hopefully it's made a difference. Chemical industry was tough to work with.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
I can imagine.
I remember some controversy about that quite a while ago, about the flame retardant, like baby pajamas. So are they not doing that anymore?
Yeah, the flame retardants in pajamas was 70s and 80s.
Yeah,
A lot of octapenta deca. You know, our first bill we passed was a deca. It's a brominated flame retardant to eliminate that and not allow that to be used in textiles and building materials.
Okay, yeah.
The original flame retardants were in pajamas. They were everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They were spraying Christmas trees with them.
I know it.
It was it was horrible stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We worked hard to get to get rid of that. I worked on a quick plug. We worked on a documentary that was on HBO with Jamie Redford, Robert Redford's son.
Oh.
And it's called Toxic Hot Seat, and it really tells the story about flame retardants. So just to...
Oh, we should make a note of that.
Yeah, I'm going to Toxic Hot Seat.
Speaking of documentaries and businesses, and this is a lousy segue, but we need to thank our underwriters.
I know what you're doing.
Stay tuned. You're listening to The Klatch at 101.9 FM.
This portion of VOV programming is brought to you by Minglement, Vashon Island's natural marketplace for the conscious consumer, where owners, staff, and customers alike embrace the importance of natural, organic, and non-GMO food and products, along with supplements, tinctures, gifts, bulk teas, spices, and herbs. Find them at Center, where the town of Vashon originated.
Can't do what we do without our underwriters, like Vashon Market IGA and Vashon Plaza, one block west of the main highway, where you can find everything your family needs, from fresh produce to kids' specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Hello, and we're back. You are listening to the voice of Vashon. I guess you know that by now. And I am Linda Nygaard, your host on The Klatch. We're sitting here with Susan McCabe and Fire Chief. I just had to say that, Matt Vincey.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, Matt, you're not exactly brand new to the Pacific Northwest. You've sort of developed a kind of a love affair with the area all the way from the East Coast. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got here?
Yeah, sure. Kind of goes back to my work in Washington, D.C. and working with firefighters across the United States and mm-hmm. Canada for the last, you know, close to 9 years. I did work in Washington State and you know, the King County area specifically, and have a lot of colleagues and friends and, you know, folks that are out there working every day to protect communities and protect mm-hmm. firefighters. So I had a really good strong network of friends. I was looking for a change. I had been flying about 30, 40, sometimes 50 round trips a year, and
wow,
and was looking for a change out of Washington, D.C. and I really was looking to go back into uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the field.
Yeah, I was curious about that, but go ahead. I want to hear more.
Yeah, so I was, again, working next to the White House and living a mile away from the White House. And, boy, I found the change. I found, the opposite of Washington, D.C.
You sure did.
Which is great.
Yeah.
I was talking to folks. This is a great system, I will say this. King County, Washington State has a really, really robust fire service EMS operation. It's well funded. There's a really great structure. It's a great tradition, established tradition. So it was really, if you look at, and I know, taking nothing away from others that provide services around the country.
Right.
I looked, you know, I've had the opportunity to look at systems around the country, and this one's one of the best. So I want
to
be a part of that.
That's wonderful to know.
Yeah, it really is. It's great, great people, and just a great overall infrastructure. So how'd I end up here? I was looking, go back into uniform, and I had folks that were saying, come out here, come look mm-hmm. at, King County. And my friend is the fire chief in Gig Harbor,
mm-hmm.
a good friend of mine. And we met years ago, and I have other friends that are close to 20-year friends in everywhere from the Tri-Cities to Kent to the city of Seattle. So I looked at jobs, a few different opportunities, and I applied as most on listening probably know.
Mm-hmm.
I was originally the assistant fire chief of operations,
yeah.
And then shortly after that, the board made a change, and I was appointed fire chief. So really proud to lead and be here, and
happy to have you,
and living
very
on the
happy.
Island too. Yeah, I live on the island. So,
well, you moved to the island in November.
I did.
Was it from Tacoma? Yeah,
I did.
Yeah,
living on the North End, and we love it.
How has your reception been?
I'll say very positive. you know, the district went through some bumps, you know, right. And we're really working to smooth those out internally and most importantly with you know, the folks that we serve, the community. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I want them to understand that we're running a professional operation. We're here 24/7. We're going to deliver high levels of service. It takes, in order to do that, it takes resources. You know, it takes, you know, strong support from the community, whether it be, you know, our levy and our financial support, you know, support with our board, support with our strategic plan, which I think sure. we'll talk about. You know, really, we want to make sure that our community understands that, you know, we take this business seriously. Mm-hmm. And in order for us to, you know, provide that, we want the best outcome possible every time we're called out the door. So
you mentioned the levy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people are listening and wondering, are you going to increase the levy? And if you are, what are you going to do with that? Even yeah. if you don't increase it, where are your budget priorities
sure.
for the coming year?
Yeah, so our budget, I just went through my first, you know, budget cycle and built a budget. I always say a budget, you know, tells a story. It shows your priorities. And, you know, our priorities were service and timely service. Mm-hmm. You know, I take the responsibility very, very seriously that when someone on Vashon calls 911, we have folks that are there highly trained with the best possible equipment that are going to be there as quickly as they possibly can. And, so we needed more of them. That was my priority, is we did not have enough staff. We were running calls with one firefighter, EMT, or at times we had no one available, and we had to wait till we cleared a call to go to another
wow.
call.
So,
go ahead. I got a little bit on a rabbit
hole. This is fascinating.
There,
well,
yeah.
it's really interesting, and this is part of your strategic plan. Speaking of which, because we do want to talk about that and how staffing, increasing staff, yep. and sort of the business end of the fire department. Can you tell us about what you're doing there?
I can. Yeah, we are working with consultants that the board hired, and we signed a contract back in September, and they've been working since September weekly on our strategic plan. Our strategic plan talks about some critical findings that we built into the budget. So the fiscal year 23 budget. The critical findings were staffing. We were just burning out our existing staff. They were working a lot of hours, and we didn't have enough of them.
Are you talking about volunteers as well?
Volunteer numbers are down, and we're going to work on that. Mm-hmm. We really had to prioritize. We only had so much bandwidth, you know, there were a lot of issues that needed to be worked on. We have a brand new finance manager who's doing an outstanding job, you know, working on every aspect of running the fire district. I'm really proud of the work we've done. We've found some things that need to be corrected financially to ensure that the public knows that we're, you know, spending their tax dollars, appropriately, mm-hmm. and that we, we're transparent about that. So that's important. But back to the budget and the priorities and strategic plan, staffing was critical. And then training is very important. It's mm-hmm. our lifeblood. And we're doing some work on restructuring right now. We have two open positions, a division chief of fire and EMS operations and a division chief of training and support services. So we're really excited about bringing those two new positions on board.
Do you have people in those positions? I'm sorry.
Not yet. No, okay. we're hiring right now. The application process is open, and we'll be looking for, we have a lot of interest in folks that want to come work with us. So we'll be going through an interview process in March.
Well, and the question that always comes to my mind when we're talking about bringing service people onto the island is, can we pay them enough to afford to live here? How are we doing in that area?
Well, we are trying to be as competitive as we can, and stay within within our budget. I think the division chief's positions have competitive pay and benefits that will help us attract good talent and retain good talented folks. So definitely something that we've done quite a bit of work on looking at comparables.
Is it required that they live on the island?
It isn't. These positions are critical at the administrative level, day-to-day level. So it'll be highly encouraged to live on the island. You know, a scenario, when I was hired, I could live a certain amount of miles. I think it's 15 or 20 miles. I lived less than a mile from any ferry. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's something we'll have a conversation with the applicants about. But on island is preferred and would sure. be really helpful.
Yeah, the ferry service isn't that reliable either.
Not
you
anymore.
Can be close, but still take 2 hours to get here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Back to the budget real quick. I'm really excited. Tomorrow, we went through a process to hire new firefighters, so resources and delivering service.
Oh, great.
Can I talk a little bit about
yes,
that?
Yes, please.
So we hired seven new positions that will help us with our daily staffing. They will be going to the academy. We have an eighth position we hired, which is an island resident who went through the academy already. So we call that a lateral firefighter. Mm-hmm.
These are all firefighters.
They are firefighter EMTs. Yeah, so they'll be going on shift. But the seven tomorrow start their orientation. Then they go to the academy for 20 weeks.
Let's talk about the academy. That's in Kent?
It's in Kent, yeah. It's the South King County Fire Training Consortium. Mm-hmm. An outstanding resource for us for Vashon firefighters. They deliver the academy, so they put the academy on 20 weeks. It's a grind.
I bet it is.
It's a lot of work.
Are they in residence for those 20 weeks?
No, they go home. They travel. They commute. Yeah, they commute back and forth 5 days a week. And then they graduate. We just graduated two out of this last class. So we mm-hmm. have two more that are graduated that are on shift now. Really proud of their work. And then the seven will graduate in July. So
you'll have new people.
We will.
Full time then.
We will.
So what's your staff going to look like by July in comparison to how it is now?
Yeah, great question. So every day they work a 48-hour shift.
Okay.
We'll have one captain and four firefighter EMTs assigned every day, every 48-hour rotation. We have four groups. So there'll be 20 what we call uniform on shift.
So is a firefighter the same as an EMT? Are they all do they all have both credentials?
If you're a career firefighter,
yes.
you also have your EMT
okay.
certification.
I didn't
as
know
well.
That.
That's
good
to know.
They
know
get that,
that
in the
yeah.
academy. Yeah. So and then I two other really main components to delivering service on the island. We have Medic 1 paramedics.
Mm-hmm.
So that we always have two paramedics that are at Station 5-5 available, highly trained and a really wonderful resource and a great partnership with the county. And then we have volunteers. We have several different groups of volunteers that augment and work with our career staff.
Mm-hmm.
We have just firefighters. We have support folks. They drive the big tenders and shuttle water. And then we have EMS, EMTs, that are just EMTs. So
EMS meaning emergency medical services.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. EMT, and they're emergency medical technicians.
Uh-huh.
And they assist and respond to emergency medical calls. Not a lot of them, and it's an area we have to work on.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Sure.
He just keeps coming up with all these things I want to talk about. What about Vashon in particular? What kinds of calls do you get? How busy are you? How successful is it? What are you learning about the community through that?
Yeah, sure. Just to kind of gauge, you know, how busy we are mm-hmm. since the first of the year, I think if I have my numbers right, we're right about 92 or 93 calls for service, 911 calls. So
that would be in 3 weeks.
It averages. You know, it's summer's obviously busier. I'm
sure.
learning. You know, we're right in the 1,700 calls, 1,650, 1,700 calls for service a year. So I should have my exact numbers, but I think we're right in the high 1,600s.
And are those, are those calls 911 emergency, I'm dying? Are they my cat's in the tree? What kind of questions or situations do you find yourself in?
Everything, you know, it runs the gamut.
Yeah.
You know, the large majority are what we discuss as, you know, a person's hardest day. Someone who calls 911 who's, you know, sick, injured,
mm-hmm.
you know, has a traumatic situation, you know, is involved in a motor vehicle accident, mm-hmm. you know, has an incident at their home, whether it be a fire, you know, a smell of smoke, electrical incident.
Okay.
We do have what they call the kind of routine bread and butter stuff, you know, food on the stove, you know, burnt mm-hmm. food.
My house is filled with smoke.
Yeah. you know, folks that have, you know, some, I guess, less urgent requests for service. But mm-hmm. I would say the majority of them, when someone calls 911, they're having a tough day.
It's
and they
serious.
Need, they need
yeah.
service. Yeah.
Something bad is happening.
Yeah.
We talked about this off mic before the show, but I wanted to bring up the question of, we had a really hot, dry summer
yeah.
this past year, and the fire potential was always high. And I was doing a little research for another project to learn. We do, and I'm not sure everyone knows about this, we have all our water is in a sole source aquifer system. And we have, I think, 7 different water districts on the island. What happens? What are the chances we can put out a fire, island-wide fire, on a hot summer with all this dry fuel around? Do we have the capacity to handle something like that?
Not alone, you know. It's we would mm-hmm. need you know, support from the zone, the state, if it was of that, you know, magnitude.
Yeah.
And those are partners that we talk to, and I'm, you know, gaining additional relationships in that space to fully understand, what would the process be and who would be available. Working with Vashon mm-hmm. Be Prepared, our King County Office of Emergency Management. For an incident of that size, lot of factors, would be in play. Fuel, as you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
Hopefully we can reduce those risks. We can identify and reduce those risks. Lower the opportunities and/or chances of a fire happening is really the first.
Well,
yeah.
Let's talk about that for a second.
So educating the public is important.
As a homeowner, or, you know, as a person who lives on Vashon, what can I do to prepare for a dry summer that will reduce the chances of a big fire? What can I, as just a citizen, do?
Sure. Follow the burn bans. That's really, really important.
Who changes
important.
Those signs?
We do. Yeah.
Vashon, you send somebody from the office out? Because I drive by it and I look at it and think, oh, it's low today. Oh, yeah. It's high today. Who changes those?
Well, we have a brand new... a plug. We have a brand new website which has a burn ban gauge.
Okay,
on it.
So, and what is the website?
VIFR.org.
VIFR.org.
Yep.
Okay.
And we can check out Vashon Island Fire Rescue.
Okay.
And it's on there. It's on typically any change to the burn ban is going to be on our social media.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course we have the old traditional way, which is the signs on the highway.
Yeah. Well, I hope those never go away.
No, they're unique.
They're kind of like Smokey the Bear, you know? They kind of they have that same feeling about them.
Yeah. Follow the burn ban. Follow the education that we put out about outdoor fires. You can, as much as you possibly can, reduce the fuel around your house. If there's ways to even rake away fuel from your home, have a good...
Get the dry grass out from under the eaves or the porch.
Yeah, dry grass.
I hope it's not under the eaves.
Small kindling, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Good yard work actually really helps remove fuel. We were mentioning earlier, we have an area in the uptown area that is actually considered... in a wildland urban interface where we have, you know, higher fuels and higher density of buildings and residences.
And does that have something to do, you know, some parts of the island are windier than other parts. Does mm-hmm. that have to do with wind as well?
Not as much wind, but it has to do with density.
Okay.
Population density and then the amount of fuel around mm-hmm. it. And then how dry that fuel gets over time.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a resident, I would say, excuse me, follow the burn ban education, remove fuel, limit your outdoor fires.
Yes.
A lot of folks like to burn, I understand, on Vashon.
Very much.
Yes, yeah, it's a very popular activity.
Yes.
But, you know, if you remove the source of, you know, the ignition source, you remove the fuel, and you know, you lessen your opportunities for having an incident around your home and or on our island. Mm-hmm. So back to your question, mutual aid is a big component of us being able to have the resources, and it's about at least a minimum of an hour away. So bringing in apparatus and staff from unless they were to fly them in, which we know that's not the best. No, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. They're going to come over by ferry. It's going to take at least an hour to bring mutual aid over to the island. So,
and would we have to draw water from the Sound or from somewhere else? Saltwater work?
It could be a resource. We have fire boats that could assist with pumping in Tacoma, in South King, and in Seattle. So we've had, as a matter of fact, I just had a meeting last week with the Tacoma fire chief and talked about networking and resources, open lines of communication. Had the same meeting with the South King Fire Department fire chief about their new boat. We don't have a lot of water capabilities in Vashon, on Vashon Fire, but it's something down the road I think we'll have a discussion about. Being able to, respond to incidents around our 50 plus miles of shoreline, structures and fires and rescues.
You know, Matt Vincey, as I'm listening to you talk, fire chief for Vashon Island, I'm hearing a lot of networking and communication, and it makes me wonder what you see as your primary function as Vashon's fire chief.
You know, the first word that comes to mind is preparedness. On a daily basis, I feel that my main responsibility, being hired to lead the department, is ensure that we're, you know, we have the highest level of preparedness.
And that includes your staff.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. It includes. So when I think about preparedness, I think about resources. Mm-hmm. And then when I think about resources, I think about where they need to be located. And how many of them that we have, and how quickly they can get to your home. So it's kind of a system. It's a deployment system, delivery system, a delivery model. And part of that, really quickly, back to our strategic plan.
Yes.
We're looking very closely at all of that I've discussed. Resources, deployment, delivery. We're looking at our facilities. We're looking at our fleet. Our fleet is old. Mm-hmm. It's aging, it's expensive, where we go back to needing support for a levy and where we're going to, you know, be able to spend that. It's going to be back putting that directly back into what I call an investment back into the community, and ensuring that we have the resources to respond. So February 16th, we're having a community meeting over at the training center to discuss the status of our strategic plan and get feedback from the community.
What time is that?
That's at 6:30.
6:30 at the training center on February 16th.
Yep.
Community, come.
Please, yes. Come. Yes. Listen, right. To
ask
where
your
we
questions.
Are. Yeah. Yeah.
If you don't come, then you can't complain later.
That's right. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
You know, I find fire very fascinating. I had a house fire in 1980, a really bad one, and I lost everything. And so I know what fire is and what it looks like. And I just admire so what it is that all of you are doing. And I know that your staff is really kind of the heart of everything that you're thinking about and doing. Correct?
They are. Yeah. They're our most vital resources are our human resources. And we need to make sure that they're, you know, like I said, taken care of, like we're doing our wellness fitness weekend. Mm-hmm. They have the right tools and equipment. They have as safe of an environment in a very, very stressful and dangerous profession and dangerous job. They're definitely at the core of, the heartbeat of delivering services. There's no doubt. Yeah.
At some point, I would like to, not today, we're not going to have time, but at some point, I'd really love to talk with you more about the science of fire and really what happens when somebody goes into the fire. I mean, we don't know anything about it. And I think if you'd be willing to come back, we could do a whole other exploration at
that
a different
would be
level.
Fascinating.
Wouldn't that be good?
That would be fascinating.
I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
You know, are you familiar with fire history in Vashon, Susan?
Me?
Yeah.
Not really, no.
You know, I read something about that. Are you surprised?
No.
So in 1922, there was a South End forest fire that burned for 3 months.
Whoa.
Tahlequah to Camp Stealth, Colvos to Quartermaster. In April 1933, Vashon Fire, half of downtown Vashon burned. In 1933, and then in 1940, they had a meeting to form a fire district.
So it's kind of like closing the barn door after the horse is out.
But most recently, in 1977, in October of 1977, part of downtown burned. There wasn't enough water pressure, and they couldn't get the fire out. And six businesses were destroyed or badly damaged. So we're really glad to have you here, Matt. It's really good to have you here.
Well, and I have two questions. We only have 5 minutes left. One is, you've talked about budget, strategic plan, and so forth. Is the levy going up?
Yet to be determined. We're going to talk about it tomorrow night at the board meeting and start having those conversations. We're in the sixth year of our levy that was passed 7 years ago, I guess, at this point. But so this is the last year of our 6 year levy. So yeah, it's my responsibility to ensure that we have the resources to do all the things that we've talked about, and part of that is you know, ensuring we have the financial means to support that. So we're not sure yet. I'll come right back and let you know as soon as we make a decision and the board makes the decision. You know, I'm going to advise and support from a staff perspective that we go and ask the voters for a levy lid lift in August of this year. But I don't want to get ahead of my bosses.
Yeah, so. we can talk about that. But this, is it this weekend? Next weekend you're doing a fundraiser?
We're going to
be... Oh, the stair climb.
The stair climb thing.
Yeah, that money will go to Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. We will be in March. We're going to be doing a stair climb of the Columbia Tower, and it's been a long, long-standing tradition. And it's a tall way. It's a tall building. But the fire service has come together in March for, I want to say, close to 20 years now, and has raised money for leukemia and lymphoma research. And
so you'll be doing that.
I'm gonna with our staff
at Thriftway.
We're going to raise money at Thriftway. We all have our personal goals, and then we have our Vashon Fire goal that we want to meet. And then, so we'll be getting on the stair climber on March 12th.
In the parking lot?
Just outside of Thriftway. In the entranceway, yeah. In our gear, and we'll just, hey, if you throw a buck in or whatever you can, you know, spare change, well, that all goes to a wonderful cause. So
are you in training now? Are you working out every day?
Not every day. I try to. I go in the morning, and we have a great gym, and our staff are in it. And
Cool.
Good.
So I'm down. We go down. We have a couple of Stairmasters, and we get down there and, you know, do our 100 flights.
Man.
Okay, so before we get away, we wanted to know more about Matt Vinci, the guy.
Okay.
So how long have you actually been on Vashon?
Since June 1. That was my first
day
on the job.
But you were working in the fire department, our fire department, before that, is that correct?
Nope. No, that was my first. That was when I was hired June 1.
Okay, got it. So, and did you bring a family with you?
My partner, my partner and our dog, Amy, and she's in...
Is Amy the dog?
Amy's not the dog. Amy's the partner.
Amy's my partner.
Who's the dog?
He's probably listening. Oakley's the dog.
Oakley is the dog, Hi, Amy.
Funny. Oh, she's great. She does instructional design for them.
And she gets to work at home.
She does, yeah.
So you're here.
She's in education, and she's... So, yeah, she's loving Vashon as well, and, Oakley is as well.
Good.
And So, yeah, we live out on the North End, and really, really enjoy it. Great people, great community. Reminds me a lot of Vermont.
Oh, does it? You know, there seems to be a connection. I know a number of people in Vashon from Vermont to New Hampshire.
Yeah, small town, community feel, taking care of each other, you know.
Liberal politics?
Well, I got to say, I am...
Vermont?
Yeah, we are the home of Bernie, so...
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Vashon was at one point designated to be the most liberal community in the country.
Oh, wow.
It was bad data.
Yeah, I remember that. We were all so excited.
Can't do what we do without our underwriters. Oh, sorry. Like Vashon Market.
Help. Wait a minute.
Sorry, I bumped a button.
That's our stealth engineer. See? Right. So I think we're out of time.
We are.
Yes, and I would like to thank you, Matt, so much for coming. It was really wonderful to have you here, and we'll look forward to having you again.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
It was
really fun.
I'd love to come back.
Okay, that's great.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening, and bye-bye. We'll see you on Valentine's Day.